Good morning. very good morning to you. It's lovely to be here and to see you all. And if ever there's an issue with my mic, let me know. I've got two sets of mics, and I know one is iffy and one is okay. I think this is the okay one. Good morning. And Dawn has very kindly agreed or offered to play the songs today because I don't seem to be very good at it. And also I pick the longest version possible of the opening song. I cannot find a shorter version, and we'll be here to 11 just listening to that lovely song. So she's agreed to play it for us while we say hello to one another, greet each other this wonderful morning. Thank you, Dawn.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thank you. Thanks, Dawn. So good morning. Looks like it's sunny most places today, which is nice. I don't know if anyone's down in New Orleans, Louisiana, but I know I've been keeping an eye out on their weather there. It wasn't supposed to be very good. So good morning. I just wanted to start with some announcements. First is about the Board of Trustees election. So congratulations to our two newly elected trustees who are here today with us, George Maddox and Jay McCormick. give us a wave. if you're following the election, you'll know it was, you might not know, but it was very, very close, actually. And all four of the nominees would have made really great trustees. And the fact it was such a close election sort of shows that. So thank you all very much to every one of the nominees for being willing to put yourself forward to serve as a trustee. I think Regina speaks for us all here when she says that she looks forward to working with the new trustees as they serve their term over the next 3 years. So congratulations again. We're excited to have you on board. The second announcement is that Awakening Together's next class is now open for registration. That class is an introduction to NTI. And it's going to be offered on Tuesday afternoons, beginning on August the 6th and Reverend Doreen Bonnet will be the class facilitator. So that's Introduction to NTI, and it's a 6-week class. And in the class, you'll become familiar with the key spiritual themes in NTI. You'll practice noticing ego, letting go of ego, and refocusing on spiritual wisdom. The cost for that class is $120 for the 6 weeks, and you can register by going to awakening-together.org. So just click on the retreats and classes menu, and then look under the classes sub-menu. So if you're listening on the radio or online afterwards, that's your link, awakening-together.org, retreats and classes menu. Our third notice for today is that our guest is next Sunday. That's July the 21st at 7:30 Eastern. So this month's guest is Locke Kelly. And that's our second time featuring Locke as a guest for our guest Satsang. And this time, Locke is going to introduce us to his new book, The Way of Effortless Mindlessness, A Revolutionary Guide for Living an Awakened Life. And the new book is already listed as a bestseller on Amazon.com. It teaches a new way to enter and stay in the flow in the midst of a busy life. How awesome is that? Locke Kelly teaches that when you unhook awareness from chattering thoughts, you can access a peaceful mind and a naturally embodied wakefulness. Wonderful. It's something we're going to be talking about today. I won't be as eloquent as Locke Kelly, I can assure you, but wonderful. So from this heartfelt space, students report they find that right action comes easily and a loving tenderness for all of life is freely available. So again, that's Satsang with Locke Kelly, and that's going to be next Sunday night at 7:30 Eastern. So mark your calendars and plan to be here in the sanctuary for that interview with Jacqueline Eckert. We'll be doing that interview. And the final announcement is about retreats. The next three retreats coming up at the Retreat House are Nature and Natural Meditation. That's July the 22nd to the 26th. Then Releasing the I Am Bad Belief, that's August the 12th to 16th, and Silence and Satsang, August the 26th to 30th. And Regina encourages those who struggle with feelings of unworthiness, guilt, or shame, anyone, to attend the August 12th to 16th retreat, since it will focus on letting go of that I am bad belief. She can't promise that you will release that belief at the retreat, because when you release that belief is up to you. But Regina does promise to teach you everything you need to know about letting it go. And she will be giving personal guidance that is specifically helpful to you and your way of holding on to that belief. You can learn more about that retreat, about all the retreats, and register for them by going to our website, awakening-together.org, and looking under the retreats and classes menu. All retreats are listed under retreats at the Retreat House. If anyone has any other things they would like to add to announcements, please type it in the room now before we have our song. All good. Okay, so over to you, Dawn. Thank you.
Controls the right. Sit at the right side, has to work hard all night. Maybe I think too much for my own good. Some people say so, other people say no, no. The fact is you don't think as much as you could. I had a childhood that was mercifully brief. I grew up in a state of disbelief. I started to think too much when I was 12, going on 13. Me and girls from St. Augustine, up in Mezzanine. Think about God, yeah.
Thank you, John. That was Paul Simon, as we saw through the years with Think Too Much version A. There's a lovely version B too, but I thought it was apt for today. I particularly like these lines. Have you ever experienced a period of grace when your brain just takes a seat behind your face and the world begins the elephant dance? Everything's funny, everyone's sunny. So we're talking about these things today. But before we do, I wanted to just read our purpose and one of the core values and then have a prayer before we commence. So Awakening Together, Statement of Purpose, we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And the core value that I sort of picked out for today was number three: we accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. So with that in mind, I invite you to join me in this prayer. Dear beloved, thank you for this gift of life, of deep experience of you and all that is. Help us to wake up, to know ourselves beyond this individual self. That is who we truly are, as one with all. Help us to not think too much and instead turn within to the silence and feel for existence that is everything, that is all, that is nothing. Thank you for your grace and for all of your help and gifts. Amen. Okay, so when I was thinking about today's reading, I'll explain a bit later, I sort of pitched it to Dawn as we'll phrase it as all is well, and we'll talk about contentedness. And then when I looked to see the reading for today, I was sort of drawn to this reading that sort of helps become content. And it's about not thinking so much. Hence the song. So Anne, who I know is driving along somewhere, there she is, has kindly agreed to share this reading. And the reading is from Osho's Book of Secrets. If you heard me on Wednesdays, and I've not been around much, but you'll know I'm kind of reading this book right now. The Book of Secrets is Osho's commentary on these 112 sutras of the Vijnana, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Bhairava Tantra. And it's supposed to be these 112 meditations that Shiva told Parvati, his cohort. And there are many commentaries on them, the Radiant Sutras being one of them. But Osho's Book of Secrets is his commentary on them. So this particular reading that Anne's going to share with us is the Sutra 82. And it's quite long, so I've condensed it a little. Quite a lot, actually, for Anne to read. But it's all available online, the full version. And if you want those links, you can send me an email. If I have time, and it's convenient, I can cut and paste somewhere in here during today. But I will keep quiet now and hand over to Anne, who I'm so grateful to for reading this today. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm just making sure you can hear me. Yes, you can. Thank you. Okay. Osho's Book of Secrets, Sutra 82. The first thing is not to think, but to feel. These are two different dimensions. And we have become so intellect-oriented that even when we say that we are feeling, really, we are not feeling. We are thinking. Feeling has completely stopped. It has become a dead organ in you. Even when you say, quote, I love, it is not a feeling. It is, again, a thought. And what is the difference between feeling and thought? If you feel, you will feel yourself centered near the heart. If I say, quote, I love you, this very feeling of love will flow from my heart. The center will be near the heart. If it is just a thought, it will come from my head. When you love someone, try to feel whether it is coming from the head or whether it is coming from the heart. Whenever you deeply feel, you are headless. In that moment, there is no head. There cannot be. The heart becomes your whole being, as if the head has disappeared. In feeling, the center of being is the heart. In thinking, the center of being is the head. But thinking prepares for survival, so we have stopped everything else. All other dimensions of our being have been stopped and closed. We are just heads. And the body is just a situation for the head to exist. We go on thinking. Even about feelings, we go on thinking. So try to feel. You will have to work on it. Because that capacity, that quality, has remained retarded. You must do something to reopen that possibility. You look at a flower and immediately you say, it is beautiful. Ponder over the fact. Linger over the fact. Don't give a hurried judgment. Wait. And then see whether it is just from the head that you have said it is beautiful, or whether you have felt it. Is it just a routine thing? Because you know a rose is beautiful, supposed to be beautiful? People say it is beautiful, and you have also said many times that it is beautiful. The moment you see the rose, the mind supplies you. The mind says it is beautiful. Finished. Now there is no contact with the rose. There is no need. You have said. Now you can move to something else. Without any communion with the rose, the mind didn't allow you even a glimpse of the rose. The mind came in between, and the heart couldn't come in touch with the rose. Only the heart can say whether it is beautiful or not, because beauty is a feeling. It is not a concept. You cannot say from the head that it is beautiful. How can you say? Beauty is not mathematics. It is not measurable. And beauty is not really just in the rose, because to someone else, it may not be beautiful at all. And someone else may just pass without looking at it. And to someone else, it may even be ugly. The beauty doesn't exist simply in the rose. The beauty exists in a meeting of the heart with the rose. When the heart meets with the rose, beauty flowers. When the heart comes in deep contact with anything, it is a great phenomenon. If you come in deep contact with any person, the person becomes beautiful. The deeper the contact, the more beauty is revealed. But beauty is a phenomenon that happens to the heart, not to the mind. It is not a calculation, and there is no criterion on which to judge it. It is a feeling. So when such techniques have to be practiced, the first difficulty will be that you don't know what feeling is. Try to develop it. When you touch something, close your eyes. Don't think, feel. For example, if I take your hand in my hand and I say to you, quote, close your eyes and feel what is happening, immediately you will say, quote, your hand is in my hand. But this is not a feeling. This is a thinking. Then again, I say to you, quote, feel, don't think. Then you say, you are expressing your love. That too is again thinking. If I insist again, quote, just feel, don't use your head. What are you feeling right now? Only then will you be able to feel and say, quote, the warmth. Try to live with feelings. Your hand is touching the chair. How are you feeling it? The air is blowing. The breeze is coming in. It touches you. How do you feel? Smells are coming from the kitchen. How do you feel? Just feel. Don't think about them. Don't start brooding that this smell shows that something is being prepared in the kitchen. Then you will start dreaming about it. No. Just feel whatsoever is the fact. Remain with the fact. Don't move into thinking. You are surrounded from everywhere. Everywhere, so much is converging on you. The whole existence is coming to meet you from everywhere. From all your senses, it is entering you. But you are in the head, and your senses have become dead. They don't feel. Then, feel the thought. Close your eyes and feel the thought. A continuous flow of thoughts is there. a continuum, a flux, where is flowing. Feel these thoughts. Feel their presence. And the more you feel, the more will be revealed to you. Layers upon layers. Not only thoughts that are just on the surface. Behind them, there are more thoughts. And behind them, there are still more thoughts. Layers upon layers. The technique says, feel my thought. And we go on saying, these are my thoughts. But feel, are they really yours? Can you say, quote, my? The more you feel, the less will it be possible for you to say that they are yours. They are all borrowed. They are all from the outside. They have come to you, but they are not yours. No thought is yours. Just dust gathered. No thought is yours. If you try hard, you can find where the thought has come to you. Silence. No one has given it to you. You were born with it, and you will die with it. Thoughts have been given to you. You have been conditioned to them. If you are a Hindu, you have a different type, a different set of thoughts. If you are a Mohammedan, of course, a different set of thoughts. If you are a communist, again, a different set of thoughts. They have been given to you, or you may have taken them voluntarily. But no thought is yours. If you feel the presence of thoughts, the crowd, you can feel this also. But they are not yours. The crowd has come to you. It has gathered around you. But it doesn't belong to you. And if this can be felt, that no thought is mine, only then you can throw the mind. If they are yours, you will defend them. And the very feeling that, quote, this thought is mine, is the attachment. Then I give it roots in myself. Then I become the soil, and the thought can remain rooted in me. If anything that I can see is not mine is uprooted, then I am not attached to it. The feeling of, quote, mine creates attachment. You can fight for your thoughts. You can even become a martyr for your thoughts. Or you can become a killer. A murderer for your thoughts. And thoughts are not yours. Consciousness is yours, but thoughts are not yours. Why will this help? Because if you can see that thoughts are not yours, then nothing is yours, because thought is the root of all. The house is mine, and the property is mine, and the family is mine. These are the outer things. Deep down, the thoughts are mine. Only if thoughts are mind can all these things, the superstructure, be mine. If thoughts are not mine, then nothing matters, because it too is a thought. Thoughts uprooted, the whole world is uprooted. Then you can live in the world and not live in it.
Thank you, Anne. So this is like half a technique of the Sutra 82, but it starts with feeling and then moving that into feeling your thoughts, and then within that recognizing that none of that is yours, and then the next step is actually I-ness, and then bizarrely the fourth step is recognizing yourself within your internal organs. There, we didn't include that bit, but there is this sort of a process. So the reason I wanted to share this today is that my direction in May, because Jacqueline did a satsang with Eshwar Segobind, and he talked about how his path to enlightenment was he followed this book. And the idea is you pick one of these 112 sutras and you just stick with it. And if it works for you, you can stay beyond 3 weeks and you keep at it, and then you'll reach, you'll awaken. That's the idea. Any one of these sutras, you just pick one that works for you. So, I got this book and I read through some of them to see kind of what would work and wouldn't work for me. And there are a couple that keep talking about this not thinking. And the first one was this commentary that wasn't related to a sutra, but it was how that problems are only caused by thoughts. That's like the most basic thing you can learn, that if all thoughts cause problems, there are no problems. If you step out away from the thinking. So with sort of that as this basis, I thought, well, that's really interesting. All the problems I ever have are only thoughts. If I just don't think about the stuff, then the problems will just not be there. So that kind of sort of was marinating. And obviously there are lots of things that marinating. Muji's All Is Well, for example, has been marinating a long time. What I noticed, and then I read this about the sense of feeling, but what I noticed over the last 2 months or so, maybe even a little bit more, is just a deep feeling of contentment, that really all is well. And this is very new to me. I feel such a relief. And it's not to say that things don't irk me. They do. I traveled last week, and waiting for your bag from luggage handling is particularly irksome to me. And watching people get their trolleys as close to that conveyor belt as possible, mind has a lot to say about that. And it's not that I don't have desires. In fact, I'm sort of aware of new desires. I was lucky Thursday night to go and see Billy Joel in concert. And at some point in the evening, seeing him there on stage at Madison Square Garden, I felt like this desire, like, oh, wouldn't it be great to be like a world rock star? And I was like, wow, I've never seen that desire before. So it's not that desires aren't coming. They are. And it's not that I'm not angry, or I am. But it's that they seem to be very momentary and deeply present when they arise. With no story kind of attached to them, really. And there are plenty of worries I have at the moment. I saw the movie yesterday also, actually, hence the last choice of song. It's not that I don't have worries. Like I'm taking a lot of medications at the moment, which have really insane, painful side effects. And in those moments, there's a lot of worry, but there's no story about it. And one of the things that's helped, so I was thinking about what is this contentness, and you know, all is well. And a lot of the sages talk about practice contentedness in the Yoga Sutras. It's one of the yamas and niyamas, is contentedness, santosha. But really, how do you practice it authentically? And what I was trying to get to when I was thinking about the reading was that that this stepping away from thoughts has created like a real contentedness in life and real like all is well, like nothing really matters, now to sing a Queen song. And so I wanted to share this reading with you and then talk you through some of the things that sort of helped me with this, about this feeling first and not thinking. So for a very long time, I thought I'd been feeling the feelings. You know, we talk about feeling, feel your feelings. And so anger would arise and I'd feel it and I'd see the angry thoughts and I'd say, that's anger arising. I am angry. I've done it. I've ticked the box. Like he says about this flat, the rose, you sort of look at a rose and just like, just go, oh yeah, it's a rose. I've got it. It's beautiful. I understand this. I've made the connection. I've looked at a rose. I've learned what to say. It's beautiful. Or, you know, when you say just, I love you, I say, I love you 100 times to my dog. Do I deeply connect with my heart every time I say, I'm not sure I do. So there's just this sort of, instead of feeling the feelings, what instead I was doing was labeling an emotion. And I think I believed that a feeling and emotion were the same. So I would say, I'm very in touch with my feelings. I know when I'm sad. I am sad. I'm sad. And allow me to feel my feelings. I'm being sad right now. And very allowed myself all this range of emotions. But that's not feeling. That's thinking. So what would happen was I could see a thought. I could see I was becoming angry. I go, okay, I'm becoming angry. And then what would come in is what I can accept this anger, like I'm irked at the carousel. Why is my bag taking so long? What is it those luggage handlers do, for God's sake? Why don't they employ more people? We have an employment problem in this country, for God's sake. So I can see that. And then I start to go, okay, all right, I can see the anger arising. I've labeled it, I've ticked the box, I've felt the feelings, I'm angry. Well, now what? Well, I can rationalize. I can rationalize, I don't know what's going on back there. No, I don't know how an airport works. Maybe people are taking time off. Also, I know I'm not supposed to be angry, so let's replace it with love. Or let's just sit with the anger. Let's just allow that to be. But really, I was never sitting with it. I was just like knowing. I noticed the anger, and there it goes. And it was all just this whole labeling and more thinking. And then what happened sort of naturally, I guess, maybe as reading this, things started to marinate. I noticed that I was standing in the kitchen and Belle said something and I felt angry, but it was like a physical sensation that was all consuming. My heart was pulsating. My skin was really flushed. And all I could feel was really just be present to this very physical sensation that was occurring at that time. And sort of being in that meant that I wasn't thinking at all. I was just deeply present to that sensation. And it kind of struck me as sort of interesting that I maybe have never done this with any of these emotions that arise, whether it's happiness or sadness or anger or irksome or impatience. So I just started kind of noticing that when these mild sensations, as I would have said they were, arose, was actually to just stop all the thoughts and go deeply within and feel into those sensations. And then what happened was that, or what happens is that, as he mentions with the holding hands, you start by you go inside and you're like, okay, my heart is pulsing. My heart is pulsing. And then when you really feel into it, and I've done this in diets before, when you really feel into it, there's no heart there and there's no my. That's just a label that you've put on to the sensation. So as you start to sort of fall into that sensation, it just is a sensation arising. That's all it is. And within that, there's a deep knowledge that you as an individual is not so. That is not, there's not a Helen that is angry. There's not even a heart that's pulsing. There's not this physical sensation in a body caused by thoughts, et cetera, although all that, yes, there's just this sensation arising. And it's so spacious. There's nothing to worry about. You're just deeply present to a sensation arising. And that could be in, so one of the symptoms of this medication I'm taking is migraines. I've never had migraines. And now I have deep compassion for people who have migraines. The pain is such that for whatever reason, it triggered almost like a panic response in the body. And just sort of deeply go into that without the labels of there's a panic response, the heart is beating, blah, 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 and just feel it. There's just so much space for it that it just then becomes a sensation and say there's nothing really to worry about. So yeah, just sort of being deeply present to these sensations that arise. And it's such a different experience. It's because it's a direct experience of the present. When I was doing the, you know, I'm angry, I can see that I'm angry, this is what I might do. Maybe there's a mantra I can apply. Maybe I'm just observing, am I angry? Even asking for me, who am I that is angry? Was all sort of coming from mind and not bringing a direct experience of that moment to me. And the direct experience of those sensations is what shows me that as an individual, I don't really exist as an individual. And it's been quite, I guess, profound, although it doesn't feel profound, but there's been a perception shift for me, also driven by a few things actually that have happened in a few teachings. It's not, certainly Eshwar, and I had a chat with him also, that there's a perception shift away from Helen as the center of the universe, which it very much was, you know, because now I can see very deeply that even referring to my leg, oh, my leg itches, or there's, you know, what is that? If you deeply dive into that, you'll see there's a sensation arising that you are labeling an itch with your leg because you're referring to you because you are your central reference point. And then as that sort of starts to crumble and get looser, not just through this teaching, but all the teachings that we're doing, as the individual starts to sort of soften away, the reference point really becomes one of a universal reference point of just Helen is part of a universe. This is what appears to be my reference point right now. But the mindset shift is much more, I am part of an entire ecosystem. And that ecosystem, if you want to use a scientific term, rather than universal consciousness or something, I don't know, it's just as me in that changes kind of everything, because why do I need to worry? What is important? There's divine guidance. I'm part of a zillion things that are happening that are all impacting one another. And really, why am I here? I'm in service to this one wonderful thing that I can't, as in my mind, possibly imagine. And life just becomes looser and much more fun and expansive as a result. So that there's not an attachment to individual, the needs and the desires. If the desires arise, there is a curiosity. How fun, and maybe I want to go with it. Maybe I won't, and it doesn't really matter. So this whole point, I'm just going to read through some of the things I highlighted in here. Just this whole teaching has been so helpful to me in stepping out of all mind and thought and deeply going inside and seeing, having the direct experience of just sensations arising. And then, of course, you begin to sort of almost sense the thoughts as they come in. They become like a feeling that they come in. So his second point about feeling. So some of the things I've just highlighted were, we've become so intellect-oriented that even when we say we're feeling, we aren't feeling, we're thinking. So it was really useful to me to just deeply contemplate that. The amount of times that we'll say, you know, I've got, you know, even in a dyad, I notice, I say, oh, I'm aware of a headache. Am I aware of a headache? Am I aware of sensations in the head? And then backing up from that, am I just aware of sensations? And then it becomes sort of who is aware, but what are those sensations? And there's such a distance there. The second one was, we go on thinking even about feelings, we go on thinking. So try to feel, and you have to work on it because that capacity and quality has remained retarded. So he says you have to do something to reopen to that possibility. So just sort of reiterating this thing that we just keep thinking, and this whole tie up between sometimes I think emotions are confused with the sensations. We just sort of tick that box. Then he talks about the rose. When you say the mind is beautiful and finished, there hasn't been a contact with that rose. You haven't deeply experienced the present moment. So, and then you just kind of move on to something else. So sort of moving into a feeling of the sensations where there really is nothing to worry. Because I know some people say, I'm worried to feel the feeling. Do you ever have that one? I'm concerned, it's too much. What if I feel the feeling and it's overwhelming? But you feel the feeling and there's nothing there. You see, it's just a sensation. It's actually much safer to feel the feeling, the deep sensation, than it is not to, because your thoughts will lead you a merry dance and make you terrified of something that isn't there. So just feel the sensations. And then you'll contact it. And then he talks about how once you start to contact something, it becomes beautiful. Which it really does, because it's kind of a nothingness. There's just like a curiosity there of like, wow, what is this feeling? Whether it's anger or happiness or sadness, it's just a feeling, a sensation. Then he says, the deeper the contact, the more beauty is revealed. Because beauty is a phenomenon that happens to the heart, not the mind. So it's not a concept. And I sort of noticed that beauty, joy, gratitude, a desire to serve, all seem to just meld into this one experience, really. Okay, it says, the more you feel, the less will it be possible for you to say that thoughts are yours. They are all borrowed. They're all from outside. They have come to you, but they are not yours. No thought is yours. It's just dust gathered. I love this, dust gathered. It says, remain with the fact. Don't move into thinking. So remain with this direct experience, which is the feeling. So, if they are yours, the thoughts, you will defend them. So this is another thing that, you know, I'm standing at the baggage carousel, and it's just so clear to me that I'm defending this Helen and her beliefs and what she has and this whole scenario of her as the center of the universe. And she's incredibly important. She needs to get her bag and get out before everyone else. Like, who knows what those other 200 people are doing with their lives, but I have an agenda, thank you very much. So it's just, it's so funny. And then it starts to drop away, and you could just look back and go, when I get my bag is when I get my bag. And that is such a much more peaceful place to be in. But it's much more sincere if it's come from this direct experience of knowing that the sensation of the impatience is nothing. It's just a mechanism going through from sort of thoughts created that you've seen aren't yours in the first place. Yeah, it's all about me. And let it be, says Hal. How I almost picked that for the playlist today. this feeling that this thought is mine is this attachment, and I give it roots in myself, and I love this, and I become the soil, and the thought remains rooted in me. So don't make yourself the soil. Consciousness is yours, but thoughts are not yours. Another one of these sutras he teaches is to feel yourself as existence, which I think is really exciting. And again, it's sort of this practice of deeply feeling rather than thinking of yourself as existence. So you know those times where you say like, well, I know I'm one with everything, or I know I don't exist, but like deeply feeling it, just trying to feel your existence throughout your day. Which I know we've talked about before, and there are many practices with Waking Together and other teachers that do this. And why will it help? Because if you can see thoughts are not yours, then nothing is yours. And if thoughts are not yours, then nothing matters. And that is really the key to contentedness. Nothing matters. All of it is just kind of playing out, and you are just lucky to be here for the ride. So what has sort of arisen from this, and I don't know if it will stay. It's actually quite funny. I said to Bill, my partner, I'm just so happy, like all the time. Like even when I'm angry, I'm happy, and even when I'm sad, I'm still happy. This just hasn't happened. And he said, oh, enjoy it while you can. I just thought how funny that was, because my point is not that something in the outside world has created this environment for me to just enjoy it while I can, for God's sake, because who knows when the shoe's going to drop and the job's going to go and, you know, something's going to not work, someone's going to get sick. But it's just this like constant sense of well-being, and it may change, and that's fine. That's also fine. But it just kind of made me laugh. Enjoy it while you can. But what has happened in this is that this deep desire to search has gone. And it's worried me a little bit. If I want to say worry, it's not really worrying me because I'm not really worried about anything. But I'm a little suspicious. There's a suspicion there. So I can't sort of say how it will play out. And it began kind of in India when I went to Ramana's ashram and went up to his meditation cave in Arunachala. And when I got there, I heard very clearly, you absolutely didn't have to come to India. And India is something that's been on my radar for like 15 years. And it's been like, I need to get to India. I'm the spiritual person. I need to get to India. I need to go and sit with where Ramana sat. And then when I sat with Muji in India, it was very clear that I may never sit with Muji again. I absolutely never have to go and sit with Muji again. It's just all here. Like the tool for awakening is this. That's it. It's just this. And that, it felt like something shifted where the training wheels were taken off, that the entire spiritual search of all of the courses, of all of the books, thousands of books, hundreds of books, were to get me to this point to just say, it's actually here. So you can just take those training wheels off and now you're good to go. Because in every single moment, it's here. And there's nothing to worry about ever. And there's nothing to seek. It's just, it's all here. And so I've found that I'm not contemplating and I'm not reading books. When there's this thought like, you really should do that, and I pick up a book or and go to contemplate, I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. I love that. I absolutely love this from today. Whether one is or one is not engaged in work, one gains the state of non-action only when the ego, with its proud delusion, I am the doer, has died and disappeared. I love this. I love this quote. Because also part of this whole not having to search is that it doesn't matter what the hell I do with my life. It absolutely matters not. And Eshwar helped me out with this because I said to him stuff like, should I be reading Game of Thrones books? Like, this actually bothered me. Should I be doing the job I do? And he was like, it really doesn't matter what you're doing. And I now understand that because this is the tool for awakening, it doesn't matter. And there's so much joy in that. And there's also just so much flow that's now happening because I'm allowing myself to do things I want to do. All the things I kind of weren't aligned with, this idea of a search and this deep, deep desire for a search has sort of fallen away. And I say, I'm not entirely comfortable with it because I know that we're supposed to be constantly nurturing this, igniting this flame for the search. And it's just, it feels like maybe it's just shifted. There's more of a, it's less about Helen and it's more about this just wanting to align with this whole, perhaps. So there's much more of a flow. So I'll just share this small story and then we'll have some music and sharing. One of these examples of this flow, and I don't know if it's an example, but it's kind of a cute story. So 5 years ago, I read an article that talked about a place in the Highlands of Scotland where they had practiced rewilding. A lot of places around the world are trying to rewild animals and landscapes back to their original conditions. Some introducing new animals, some just letting them be as they are and sort of allowing things to come out. You might have heard about the wolves in Yellowstone. So in the Highlands of Scotland, there is a place they're trying to rewild. They're planting trees and they wanted to bring back wild boar. Now, wild boar haven't been in the Highlands of Scotland for 200 years. And wild boar have a symbiotic relationship with robins. If you've ever seen wild boar in action, they are like a plow. They will destroy any land there, completely upturn it, so it's just like earth. And the robins pop behind them, picking up the grubs. But the boar haven't been in the Highlands for 200 years. So this article I read said that in this place in the Highlands of Scotland, they reintroduced wild boar, and within 20 minutes, the robins returned. And those robins would not have remembered. It was the robins remembered was the point. So I wrote this article about rewilding our souls and how deep down inside us we remember, even though it might not have happened in our lifetime. Like for these robins, there were no boar in their lifetime, but they remembered that relationship. It was such a profound article for me, and I wrote this story about it. And I think about it often, this sense of rewilding. And I happened to have a few days in between monitoring, and I had decided when I got back from India, I don't know, it sort of came to me that I was going to write about conservation for a big magazine article I'm working on, how we can bring more capital to it. And so I was given this 10 days off monitoring, and I thought, well, I'll take this opportunity to go and travel and see some rewilding places for work. I guess it was just always there in my head. So this big trip turned up. It happened in 2 days. It got booked, a 4-country trip. All the meetings came in within 2 days of me putting it out there. So I kind of just knew that there was this flow happening. It was all going to work. And the fourth country I went to was Scotland. And as I was, it was such a busy trip. I really didn't get my head around, you know, I hadn't done enough research on all the people I was supposed to meet. And I was arriving to meet this company called Trees for Life. And so I quickly looked them up and I saw that they were the ones at the Dundragon Estate in the Highlands who had reintroduced the wild boar. And I was actually going to meet them. And when I checked my email from Trees for Life, it said, we're going to drive to Dundragon for the day. And I couldn't believe that something 5 years ago was sown. So I reread the article, and it turns out I'd mentioned Trees for Life in this article as having done this with the wild boar. I'd just completely forgotten. So we go to Dundragon, and it's actually quite a sad story. The wild boar, they try to keep an enclosure, a huge enclosure initially, because they can wreak havoc with landscapes, and it didn't work, and some of the boar had to be shot, and some died. But since that time, the wild boar have returned for some reason. They don't know how. There's wild boar running through the Highlands right now. And he said, I'll take you over and show you where they ran through last week. And I think it's all just churned up turf. And I was like, well, this is great. I get to see the wild boar and close that circle and all of that. So we're going to leave the day. I've been there like 5 hours. And someone says, could you mind just dropping me back off at the lodge? It's next to where the wild boar have just come through. And we said, of course. So we drop him off and off we go. And as we drop him off, we pull up the car, and there in front of us jump along robins. It was just so beautiful to see that it was true. But it felt like there's just a flow happening now. There's like a magic almost without the thoughts, without this notion of a Helen. And it comes in, of course it comes in, that there's this person here and she has wants and needs, but it's sort of, when I sense it, I can feel it and I can sort of move into those sensations and just know from these direct experiences I'm having feelings that it's not true, it's not there, that it's just, I'm just part of like a whole beautiful web of things happening, and I can just sort of trust everything to go, and it's actually just much more beautiful when it does. So on that, I have a song and invite you to contemplate and also to make your donations if you'd like to. Dawn will put up the note, and then we'll return and share if anyone wants to share. ¶¶
is a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. But don't worry, be happy. Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy.
Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this.
Don't worry,
it will soon pass, whatever it is.
Don't worry, be happy.
I'm not worried, I'm happy.
Like the way it says, you can give him a call if you're worried. I feel like you can just go inside if you're worried. That's your call. You make a call inside. Thank you for your donations. Does anyone want to share at all? We have 5 to 10 minutes or something. I see some Jay's coming to the mic.
Thanks, Ellen. That was awesome. Can everybody hear me? Yeah, I had an experience when we were actually in retreat driving to Cordoba Pass. It was this 11,500-foot beautiful vista view, and the road was really bumpy, and really bumpy. We were in Jacqueline's 4x4, and I had a moment where I was almost starting to get irritated that I was in a truck that was really uncomfortable to this, you know, relaxing spiritual contemplative destination. It was horribly bumpy. And right before I got upset, I just stopped and I said, what's occurring right now? Let's just observe what's happening right now. Well, my body's moving up and down. Am I in pain? No. And I just sort of surrendered that and just went with the bumpiness and ceased to be, you know, I never actually got upset or irritated or irked. I liked your use of the word irked. That was funny. with your little luggage situation. But so it's kind of a similar example, I guess I could bring up, to talk about your, you know, with your luggage. Excellent illustration. I loved listening to tell that story. That was fun. So as a little story to from my own experience recently, it kind of fits into that.
Great talk, Helen.
Yay! Yeah, everyone here says great talk and giving you applause, Helen. We love you. It was wonderful to listen.
Thanks, Jay. Retreat Center in the house. thanks, Jay.
Helen, can you hear me?
Yes.
It's Kathy. I'm on my phone. I feel so grateful both for the reading and for your sharing. I really want to visit this further. It feels right, I guess I might say. And also just your personal experience. It feels like I'm having a parallel experience to that where, and this is just the way I will say it, living life is enough right now. Each moment, living my life, hopefully in presence. And as you said, you know, yes, I still get angry. Yes, I still have moments of expectation or wanting it to be different, all of that. But just reducing all of the local knowledge, as our seven steps would say, to living life simply in presence feels like enough. I don't have this urge to contemplate, to write anymore, to so many things just don't feel necessary and right now, that simply living life right now is enough. And so I was just absolutely grateful for the feelings part of it and sensations and noting. And I need to look at that more clearly. I was kind of moving around and so it was cutting out here and there, but I feel like it's really important that I look at that again. Because I recognize the Kathy personality is a very emotional personality, and the feelings seem to be right on the surface, and spill of their own accord. And so stepping out from that and back into looking at that as an occurrence, something that's just happening to the Kathy personality, and not, I'm still not sure if there's like some sort of a healthy balance between deeply feeling it and kind of getting stuck in the muck of it. So I don't know. It just feels like something I need to look at more. And so I appreciate if, yeah, you can provide the URL again or whatever, or the reading, the pages, whatever. It would be very helpful to me. And thank you so, so much. And I'm giving up the mic here.
Thanks, Kathy. And yeah, we've been tracking each other for a while, I guess. So absolutely, always send you the link. And anyone who wants the link can just email me and I'll happily send it. I see there's a couple more hands up. I was just going to add to that and everyone's experience will be different, I guess, but in there was no sense of ever getting mired in anything, because the minute you deeply just see the sensations, they're just sensations arising, and there's nothing to get mired in. I mean, I guess, and they're not unpleasant or pleasant, so it's not anything that you'd be attached to staying within, if you see what I mean. So it's not, whereas emotions we can very much get mired in, like this, because that's the story and that's the thought. So if that's so once you have sort of that experience of it, it might shake that out. So I see Aggie's got her hand up.
Hi, Helen. Can you hear me? Great. Well, thank you for this. It was a great talk. It really spoke to me. you know, I'm really getting this feeling that you talked about this flow. It's kind of like, you know, we don't know we're on the same wave, and it comes in a little bit differently for everybody. But for me, I'd say the past 3 weeks or so, this idea of addiction, addiction to thought and addiction to words has been coming up. And I've kind of been sitting with that, and it seemed to, I don't know if it will mesh that way with everybody else, but to me, what you were talking about is exactly that. You know, this idea that we're so used to wrapping ourselves up in these words and thoughts, and it kind of shows up for me in this resistance to silence. And it, I mean, even here when we're in our classes together, you know, like someone, oftentimes in general hearing one, Jacqueline will say, okay, so who wants to share? And there'll be this silence, right, where nobody will talk. And there, you can feel the anxiety level that starts to come up, you know, like, well, we've got to fill the space there, you know, what, and so there's, and I don't really have an answer to that other than it's seeming more and more like that's something for, at least for Aggie to look at. You know, this whole idea of being okay with the silence and being okay without having a million thoughts going on and having the words to express it. So that's really all I wanted to share, and just, you know, to say thank you, Helen.
Thank you, Aggie. Yeah, I guess it is an addiction that you just wean yourself off of. and I'm excited to hear what then Locke Kelly says next week, because it sounds like it's sort of a similar thing that he's talking about. So it's interesting that we're that's coming up too. Would anyone else like to share before we sign off? We might have time for a little snippet of song before we move into fellowship. But of course, if anyone wants to share, they're welcome, or they can share in fellowship. Dawn has kindly shared the link if you're interested. But otherwise, we'll have this. I just want to say thank you very much. And thank you to Anne for a beautiful reading. Thank you for Dawn for sorting out the music. And thank you to you all for being here. I'll be around for fellowship.
Here comes the sun.